We are going to continue our sermon series this week. And as I said, last week we talked about using the idea of what Starbucks does as a coffee company and that idea of experiencing it for the importance of us experiencing God in worship. And I think it was a really important thing to do because I did learn something last week, because I did make mention of one of the Starbucks experiences is getting music downloads. And the nice thing is, since I mentioned that, people have brought me in more. So if anybody would like to bring me in more, you can continue to do that, and I will continue to download music. So I thank you for that part of the experience. But today we're going to move from the experience of God to participating in God and in the life of the church. And it's a big and important step that we take in ministry, and so we're going to take a good look at it today. One of the things about the experience of coffee that's so unique is that when you go to a place that serves coffee, one of the first things you experience is not the taste of the coffee, it's not the sight of the coffee, it's the aroma, isn't it? The smell of the coffee. And I know people that don't even like to drink coffee but enjoy the smell. It's part of the whole thing. And so you can go into a Starbucks and you can do that. And I can remember myself growing up, and my bedroom was the bedroom in our house just off the kitchen. And my father would get up very early in the morning and he would make coffee in the percolator. Everybody knows what a percolator is, of course. I don't imagine you can buy a percolator anymore. But the percolator would send the aroma of the coffee just going through the house, and it was so significant and so important part of that experience. But as we go, we learned one thing quickly. If I go to Starbucks and I order a steaming, extremely hot cup of coffee, and I leave it sitting on the counter, after about 10 minutes, it starts to become an abandoned cold cup of coffee. And that's not what Starbucks wants. Starbucks knows something. Starbucks knows that to participate in the Starbucks experience, I have to drink the coffee. And that's an important part of my participation. As I say all these things to you today, you may notice that there is a not-too-veiled connection between the Starbucks experience I'm talking about and our faith. Because faith also is not something just to be looked at. Church is not something that we come in and look at on a Sunday morning and turn around and walk away from. Our relationship with God is something that we're invited to participate in. And it's when we participate in God and our life in God that the richness of our life becomes even more apparent. The truth is that when you drink coffee, a good strong coffee, it sticks with you for a while. Anyone ever notice that? Anyone married to someone that likes to drink coffee? Have you ever went up to give them a nice kiss after they've had a cup of coffee? You know, notice how the aroma sticks with you. Well, as people of faith, the aroma of God should stick with us. The Bible talks a lot about God giving us breath. God breathes into us this spiritual, this spirit-filled life. And that should come right out of us. And anyone that meets us should be able to smell the aroma of the Spirit of God on our breath, and to know that our life is one that's empowered by God's presence. And that's an important part of what we do with that overall experience. Because what I want you to think about today is the importance of participating in your faith journey. The importance of saying, I want to be more than an observer. I want to be more than someone that comes on Sunday morning and appreciates the music and survives the message. I want you to be someone that comes on Sunday morning and said, this is something I'm going to participate in. I'm going to get my hands on it. I'm going to sink my teeth into this experience. If you ever want to mess someone up at Starbucks, I want to tell you what to do. Go into Starbucks and walk up to the counter and say, can I have a cup of coffee, please? I mean, they'll look at you like you're from some other planet. You don't go into Starbucks and order coffee. It just doesn't work that way. Anybody here drink Starbucks? Oh, a couple of you. Pete, what do you drink? The most bold they have. Tim, what do you drink? Bold. Anybody else, what do you drink? You know, one of the things I like to get an iced caramel macchiato upside down. Anybody else like those? Somebody in the first service liked a light Frappuccino. You see, you have to understand something about Starbucks. They have their own language, just like we have our own language. One of the things that's really fun that I discovered when I was reading the book and preparing this week was that Starbucks, each Starbucks, if you go in and that you ask them, they have a book, and that it's entitled Make It My Drink. And the book is not for the employees, but the book is for customers. And so you come into Starbucks, and they'll give you the book, Make It My Drink, Please. And then you can take that and say, please make it my drink. And in that book, they explain every drink and all the combinations and all the permutations. And he says in that there are about 30,000 combinations. 30,000 combinations that you can put together to have a cup of coffee at Starbucks. I found that interesting, so I asked Greg in our ministry menu, which you can choose from, and I said there's got to be a lot more than 30,000 in here. If I had a mathematician, they could work on it. Greg told me if you choose just up to 5 of our ministry opportunities, you could have over 17 million choices. See, we are better than Starbucks, but we want to offer you the same kind of opportunities to make it your own. We want you to make this your own church. Not just because you're coming here, but because you are participating here in your own unique ways, with your own unique flavors, where you want to fit in and participate. So I think there's a lot for us to learn from that, and I think it's an understanding that we really need to participate in our own faith journey. It's one of the things that we can learn, not only from Starbucks, but from so many other companies out there. There's a thing that we kind of call participation through innovation. Now, I don't know if you know any companies that are doing this today. Anybody ever drink a Jones soda? Anybody besides me? Jones sodas, you can participate in the Jones Soda Company. You can help make your own label, and if you want to, you can even order your own cases with your own label on it. They want you to participate and be fully involved in the process. Lego is doing that now. Anybody Lego fans? I have a son that, you know, I think owned 4 million Legos. And you can do anything with Legos the same way. The Kettle Food Company is doing the same thing. Over and over again, there are companies that are figuring out you're going to be more invested in them if you participate, in the product. I think Jesus figured that out a long time ago. Jesus didn't want you to come and observe the faith. Jesus invited you to come and participate in the faith. And so it's so important that we recognize that. Starbucks has learned that the more you participate, the more positive your experience. Anybody ever found that out in the church? Have you ever went to a church, maybe this one, and not really got involved? And then sometime after 6 or 8 months or a year or 2 years, you found out the experience wasn't as positive as you thought it was at first. But perhaps when you can fully invest and participate in the life of a church, then, just as Starbucks found out, you're going to find the experience much more positive, and you're going to appreciate the experience much more. For Starbucks, art is not based on performance, but on participation. We're that way too. I think we have one of the greatest choirs in the first service I've ever been associated with. Now, Tim, how many professional musicians do you have singing in that choir? None. Oh, how many of them have made CDs? None. How many of them always sing on key? Oh, no, we don't want to ask you that. Occasionally they sing off key. There's one or two. You never know. But you know what makes it such a beautiful performance for me is they're participating. I mean Tim would probably even allow me to sing. He's so gentle. I don't know. He may have the line there. But he is so inviting and caring because he knows that what happens is that when you participate, you appreciate the experience so much more. And so we want to invite you to be a participant at Christ Church, not a member, but a participant. People need to participate. I truly believe that. It's so true in all walks of life. there's an artist whose name's Dale Johnson, and Dale will go to a community and he'll find an outside wall, maybe like our blank inside wall over here. And he'll ask permission to paint the wall. And he will begin painting a neighborhood art piece, he calls them. And he'll be painting a mural on that wall. But he doesn't just stop with that. Every time someone walks by, he looks and says, "Johnny, come on, I want you to help me paint." And Johnny, it may be a stick figure, it may be a tree, or maybe Johnny will be a gifted artist and add something really powerful, but it's all participating. And the art is so appreciated in the community because it was a community art piece. That's what happens in the church. We appreciate the life of our church so much more when we find ways to participate and join in the life of faith. Several years ago, you may remember this, some of you at least, General Electric had a slogan. And General Electric's slogan was, "We bring good things to life." That was their slogan. That is a slogan that I believe Jesus had too. Jesus continually brought good things to life. Jesus continually brought beauty into life, and power, and healing, and grace, and love, and mercy. And we as people of faith are called to join in that ministry of Jesus. We're to participate in it and help bring good things to life, especially in a lot of lives where people are hurting and in pain. We're called to participate and to help that. God began the existence of Jesus among us with that very same kind of process. We have a great theological word for what happens at Christmas. We call it the incarnation. What that means is that God, the God of the heavens, the God of the universe, God the Creator, became incarnate, became in human bodily form, and came to be here in our world, not as an observer, but as a participant. The story of Christmas is God is one of us. God came here and God participated. Sometimes we want to act as if Jesus' job was to represent God here. But Jesus' job was to participate with us and to show us a way to live life differently, a way to follow in the path that Jesus lived. And that path always meant participation. We are called as people of faith to participate in the divine mission of Jesus Christ. When you say you're a person of faith, you're making that statement, "I'm willing to participate in this journey." And Jesus is always about participating. To start with, there was a study done. It was in the book, The Gospel According to Starbucks. And the person that did the study discovered something very unique, that over 54% of the encounters that Jesus has with other people were initiated by the other people. Jesus opened the door for people to participate with him, and people kept walking through the door. And we're inviting you today to the same thing. You have this opportunity to participate in this divine mission. All you have to do, and I'm going to challenge you to do this. I want you to go home. You don't have to do it today, but do it sometime in the next week. You know, get out your Bible. If you don't have one, we'll give you one. I mean, you know, get the dust off of it. Whatever you have to do, get your Bible out. Leaf through the pages. Go back to the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I want you to go back to the Gospels, and I want you to look for how many times Jesus invites people to participate as opposed to observe what he's doing. It begins with the call to the disciples. He's walking along. He sees a couple of disciples and he says, "Come and follow me. Come and participate in the ministry that I'm about." And it goes on and on, even in healings. Even when Jesus is doing a healing, he's often inviting the person being healed to participate. To the blind man, he says, "Participate, get up, throw off your cloak, come and be with me. Participate." For the man who's brought by his friends and lowered through the roof of the house, he says, "Get up, take your mat and walk. Participate." He could have just said you're healed and it's okay and move on down the road, but no, participate. How about the feeding of the masses? Do you remember the story? They participated. They said, we don't have enough food. Jesus said, well, just take these baskets and pass them around. And when they passed the baskets around, the people participated and there was food left over. Jesus is always inviting people to participate, even in his last moments. When he was here in the resurrection, in the book of John, he speaks to Peter. And what does he say to Peter? Feed my sheep. Participate in ministry. Ministry is not a spectator sport. Ministry is something we're all called to be a part of. It's not the job of the people that stand up front and preach and play the music on Sunday morning. It's all of our jobs as people of faith. And Jesus says, feed my sheep. And so Jesus is always calling and encouraging us to participate in ministry. From the very beginning, it's so important. I believe that people really and truly long to participate in ministry. I think people long to belong, whether it's in a sports club, whether it's in a social gathering, whether it's here at church. We have a longing to belong to others. And I want to encourage that we consider how we can do that. One of the things we must know is that Jesus did not expect everybody to buy into his revolutionary message, and it was revolutionary. He didn't expect everybody to buy into it. What he expected was that people would sit and they would listen. They would hear the story of God's story. And then he could invite them, come in and participate. Jesus did not have regular disciples. He had different kinds of disciples. And I want to make sure we understand that. Because do you know what regular disciples would have done in the day and age of Jesus? I mean, regular disciples would have talked about what their master said. Regular disciples would have written books about what their master said. Regular disciples would have stayed in Jerusalem when Jesus left. They might have opened a little theological school and talked about Jesus and taught about him and let people come in so they could learn about who Jesus was. But these weren't regular disciples. Jesus said to his disciples, he didn't say, stay in Jerusalem. What did he say? Go to where? The ends of the earth. Go everywhere and do ministry and teach and baptize and do all of these things. But don't stay here. Don't stay here. Jesus knew that ministry is about participation. He knew his disciples were called to participate. And you see, that may seem a little extreme, but the truth is that I think, as I remember Martin Luther King said it, we're not going to choose whether we're going to be an extremist or not. We're only going to choose what we're going to be extreme about. And I want you to consider being extreme in your participation in the life of the church, because it will help others and it will feed your spiritual journey in ways that you cannot believe. And I'm calling you today to say, how can I fit into this picture? How can I participate in the ministries of Christ's church? How can I truly not only smell the aroma of the Spirit of God here, but how can I participate and taste the presence of God here? I want you to consider that. Niccolo Paganini was perhaps the best virtuoso violinist of his day. When he was very ill, he had a beautiful violin. And he wanted to donate it to the city of his birth, Genoa, Italy. And so he asked the officials if they wanted it. They said, sure. But he said, there's only one condition. No one can ever play this violin again. And so the city accepted the violin. But what they didn't know was this, that kind of wood that the violin is made of is meant to be held and touched and brought out into the air and the sunlight. And when it is, that kind of wood lives forever. But when you take that delicate violin and leave it in the case and never touch it, the wood begins to decay and to rot, and that once beautiful violin is nothing more than a relic of something in the past. Our faith journey can also be that way. If our faith is about a decision we made when we were 12 or 14 or 16 or 28 or 42, it's just like letting it sit in the case and begin to decay. Our faith life is meant to be brought out into the fresh air, to be brought out into the sunlight, to be used and to be lived and to be participated in. In just a few moments, I'll invite the ushers to get ready, and I'll ask them and tell them when I'd like them to come forward. But in just a few moments, the ushers are going to pass out our ministry menus. And these are the opportunities you have, and not all of them are listed here. We made a mistake on one thing. It was my fault, and I'll have that as an addition next week. But the ministry menus are opportunities for service ministries in the life of our church. And I want to make sure you understand that. It's not for small group fellowship or Bible study. All those things are important. But this is the opportunity to show your discipleship and to participate in ministry. We have everything here listed. I mean, everything here listed that you could possibly imagine. You can be on our hospitality team. Those are the ones that help find visitors and give them our visitors packets. You can be work with the youth on the parent committee if that's where you fit in. You can be in music, whether it's in Tim's choir at the first service. You could volunteer for other music possibilities. You might want to be on hospital visitation or the recreation team. You could take a look at all of those opportunities that are here. And when we pass these out, we want you to begin to do that. Now, I don't want this filled out today, because 2 weeks from today, as part of our worship experience, we're going to have a ministry fair right in this room. And all of these ministries will be represented. And so you might want to sign up for some things you know you want to, but maybe you've considered doing something else. Like maybe you've considered you'd like to be in the prayer ministry, but you're not sure what's involved. Well, that Sunday, at the end of the service, you'll be able to go. There'll be signs around the room, and here will be the prayer ministry. And you can go up and ask them, what's this going to require? How much time? When will we be doing it? Or perhaps hospital visitors will be over here. And the one thing we left out, and they'll be ready by next weekend, is your opportunities to help fight child abuse. And so we'll have somebody representing our mentor program, reading at Miami School, to tell you how many days a week she does it, or he does it, and how many children they do it for, how long it takes when they're there. You'll learn all that stuff. If you want to be a CASA advocate and fight for our children in the court system, we'll have probably Lynn Richardson will be up here, our child advocacy coordinator. And you'll be able to say, I think I'd like to do this, Lynn. What is it going to take for me to do this? Because we think your participation is vital not only to this church, but to your spiritual journey. And so we want to give you that opportunity to participate. And when you do, I said, you'll be doing that for a year, and it's a great opportunity for you. So I want you to think about this menu the next couple of weeks. And I want you to think about where you might fit into the ministry of the church and of Jesus Christ. And I want you to think about how you can participate. Because that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Our faith is best lived in action. Our faith is not best lived in talking about it. It would be so easy to have a faith that all we did was sit around and talk about it. And we could theologize and philosophize. We could do all those kind of fun words. Or we could have the kind of faith that is lived out in action. I didn't know I was going to say this before I walked up here, but I just happened to think about this, and I wanted to share it with you. It's not fair to the person, but I'm going to do it anyway. We recently hired a new youth pastor, Heather, sitting right down here in the front row. We interviewed on the phone 20 people. We invited 3 people in. Heather was one of them. And one of the reasons that I knew Heather was the right person for Christ United Methodist Church was that Heather, in her previous church, talked about the importance of being in ministry. She didn't talk about, oh boy, am I good at putting together big fun events. Not that she doesn't do that. She didn't say, oh boy, am I the best ski trip coordinator you've ever had. No, she didn't say any of that. But she talked about going into the inner city in an after school program. She talked about missions trips. And if there's anything that I want the young people of our church to be involved in, is in ministry. Because I know it's involvement in ministry that deepens your relationship with God and your connection to the church. And so that's one of the reasons that I knew immediately Heather was the person I wanted. And you are the people I want also. Because I want you to participate as God is calling you to do. And now, ushers, would you come forward with those and pass those out? And I said, as I said earlier, you can begin to look at those today. And again, just a reminder, this is always an important reminder, even though I could say it five times in one service and you still won't hear me. If you did something this year that's coming to an end in January, you have to sign up for it again, because these are one-year commitments. So don't just assume that, oh, I'll get a call to do so-and-so next year. Because if you don't sign up for it, you won't. And we want you to sign up and participate in the life of Christ Church. So take a good look at that. And I think it's something that's so important. Last year, I will tell you that we had almost 400 people sign up to do ministries in the church. I'm hoping this year it'll be over 400. And out of that total of almost 400 people, they signed up for 1,700 different positions. So I'm not good on this math stuff, Greg, but with a little help, I'm hoping we can go further this year and reach out and touch more lives for God and for Jesus in this community through your help and your participation in our ministries. And with that said, just so I can keep the ushers busy, I would now invite the ushers to come forward as we can give of ourselves and all of our gifts and give them back to God.